I always know when a big holiday shopping weekend is coming because there are sales everywhere telling me to shop now or miss out. But when I shop at Bob's Discount Furniture, I never have to miss out because Bob's has the latest summer styles at everyday low prices. Plus, Bob's has tons of real five-star reviews for me to rely on, which is how I found a real marble elm dining set with over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom reclining sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to skip the holiday weekend gimmicks and score five-star style for every room in your home, listen to the smartest shoppers around and shop at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Hey, it's your girl, Titi Torres, and let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a mother, a wife, plus a 20-year multimedia executive and personality,
and your host of Tap In with Titi, the podcast,
where the culture speaks loud and clear. I'm having conversations with your favorite artists, rising stars, movers and shakers,
from the streets to the boardrooms, from healing to hustle.
New episodes every week on the Odyssey Creators Live,
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your audio.
So tap in with me, Titi.
What are you waiting for?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is. That's all.
Oh, yes, mama. I was going to say, am I having a hallucination or did we already do this podcast before? Because we covered the first one, you know?
We did. Ha-ha. With the wonderful, wonderful, talented Liz Hannah. Go listen to it. But that's not what we're here for today.
We're not.
And I'm going to get the intro out of the way real
good
quick.
Good call. Yes, please.
Because it's going to be a nice shaggy solo episode, as always. So, welcome to the Halls of Runway. I'm Brooke Solomon, features editor.
I'm Jordan Gustafson, assistant to the assistant in the back room.
Oh, okay. I see. We're on very different career trajectories.
Yeah, yeah. I'm getting demoted at Red Runway.
We love talking about cinema. We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. We're talking about it on mic. Today, we are discussing, that's right, the long-awaited sequel, The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Hell yeah.
No creative sequel.
The Devil Wears Prada again. The Devil continues to wear Prada.
The Devil pulls Prada from the archives.
The Devil wears
Coach. It's getting sweaty. Miranda Priestly, I don't think, would be caught dead.
I mean, the gag at the end where she was like, how's Coach? Ugh, devastating.
It's so funny because it's like, we grew up in New England.
Yes.
Coach goes far.
It does.
In New England.
Okay, here's the thing. This is a good question. We walked out of the movie theater. I was gagged. I was gooped. And I turned to who I saw it with, my partner, and I was like, I think Miranda Priestly would shoot me on sight if she saw what I wore. And I like genuinely don't even think I would make it past like an interview stage. Even in my best dressed fit, I think I would still get killed.
You have some decent fits, though.
Like, I know, but like, not enough.
You're pretty stylish.
I don't know how to like accessorize well. Because I don't like rings on my fingers.
Ugh,
I don't have any. Rings. I don't have a loop. I don't have any fun nose things. You know what I mean?
I think you should get some piercings. Just like some ears.
A lot of friends of mine are actually friends are getting piercings. We're discussing piercings. It's on the mind.
However, into piercings.
Not for me.
Yeah. I think that I think Miranda Priestly would also shoot me on sight. I'm very interested in fashion. Also, like, we're recording this on Met Gala Monday.
I know.
Which is so exciting.
The fits were rolling in.
I am delighted. I'm very interested in fashion, but I don't think I personally would get very far.
Correct.
In fashion.
Yes, we feel the same here. Yeah.
Although I will say, Andy is rocking some menswear in this, and I think I could go far in fashion if I could wear like exclusively menswear or like gowns. Mm-hmm. It's this kind of
like a nice suit or something.
Mid-level, ready to wear, like what the people wear right. in this movie for the most part. That's where I'm like so lost. I can't do that.
Maybe Kenneth Branagh is like an aspirational icon in this though, because he's kind of like low-key not slaying with his outfits, but like he doesn't need to be, you know?
He's dressed nicely. Also, Caleb Heron has great outfits that I felt like were very Jordan.
That's
like
good. Tame, not loud.
Tame, not loud.
But like, I actually like prefer
you
louder,
have
but
fun
I guess.
Stuff.
But
yeah, I was going to say. Stuff. Jordan, sure. like Jordan, I feel like the Jordan look is like a jumpsuit.
Yes.
Cool sneaks, because at heart you are a little bit of a sneakerhead and that's fine.
That's true.
And like a really fun shirt. Like you have really fun.
These are all the things that are true.
Colorful clothing.
I feel like you would slay the house down boots. I'll just say that.
I can do menswear.
I will say, honestly, the thing that I thought you were going to say that you could rock was when Emily is in her funeral outfit. Like Loki, I feel like you could serve in that. Yeah.
I feel like it's just so costumey. I don't know.
Sure.
I remember. Yeah. So we recorded an episode a while ago on The Devil Wears Prada, the OG. There was no way that we weren't going to cover the sequel.
Of course.
I spoke to my mother today. She had the audacity to ask me what was queer about this movie. And I was like, it's about the fashion industry.
Yeah.
What?
Donatella Versace.
Hours. She's in it. She's here.
She's
Lady
here.
Lady Gaga.
I mean, okay. If we're being honest,
no.
That is a Hang whole... On. We have to... That is just a different discussion. Yes.
Table it.
Yeah.
We cover this film. We were going to cover the sequel.
Miranda Peasley is, in of herself, an icon, a legend for the queer community, you know?
Yes. Also, I don't think I mentioned this last time, but Miranda and Andy, a.k.a. Mirandy, is a old ship.
Yeah.
Of which the backbones of fan fiction... low-key owe a lot to.
So I walked out of this movie and I was like, great, I know the app, I see the app, blah blah blah. I log on to twitter.com and I would just like to say that this is how the podcast has influenced my Twitter feed. Very rarely had I been getting a lot of like ship stuff on my TL until Brooke and I really got into like Superman a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And now like the first three tweets I saw after I saw the movie were three ship tweets about Miranda and Andy and or Emily and Emily. Andy. And yeah. I was like, I am forever ship core now. I see it anywhere I go.
It's a good place to be.
It is. Honestly, though, because I'm like, that's true. It's right there.
Exactly. Point being, there's plenty to discuss.
Yes.
I think that first of all,
please.
Big, big, big spoiler warning. We are going to spoil the entirety of The Devil Wears Prada 2. If you don't want that, that's okay. But please leave. And then come back.
That's all.
That's all. Secondly, I recommend this movie. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
I thought it was very good.
I had a blast.
Is it as good as the first one? Obviously not. But
is it close though?
I think that as people that are living in a world that is full of nostalgia bait, sequel slop, whatever words you want to smush together and portmanteau into how to describe gestures around at society and the state of the media landscape, this movie is like head and shoulders above that.
Yes.
It is. Does not feel like a cash grab.
No.
It does not feel like a retread. It feels like a legitimate sequel, follow-up yes. story in the wake of how media has changed and
in
how these characters
years.
Would evolve alongside it.
100%. No, this is like, I think, one of the smarter sequels we've had in quite a long time. And something that I think what I liked the most is I think the whole first movie is so predicated upon this like excitement and the allure of the fashion industry and how big and colorful and just like at the time, like that's like the most glamorous world, right? And now we're living in a landscape in which like magazines basically don't exist. Everything is online. The whole industry has completely changed, and I think like that depression, if they hadn't commented on it, I think would have been so jarring that I think like the realism that is piercing this movie is so strong. Like I walked out of this depressed as fuck, honestly, because I think like as two people in the film industry, I'm like, a lot of this also mirrors like what we're going through in the way in which like our current media landscapes are absolutely being obliterated by just men in ugly suits with money, you know?
Yeah. And I was trying to kind of think more grandly about how, like, yes, this is a movie about how art is better than tech, but I was trying to look at it on like a larger scale, because I think that that is a very common theme in films from the last 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way that there's like a handshake between journalism and fashion, showing that like what we're really losing is tangibility.
Yes.
And that like without tangibility, you have no culture.
Yes.
Was
like the degradation of culture. Yeah.
Yes.
I think about the contract.
And not just like tech bad.
Right. No, it's way more nuanced than that. Even though Justin Theroux is playing it with the subtlety of a fucking sledgehammer, I think it is like a lot more nuanced.
I really like, I did not think that this would, and I don't know, maybe David and Aliana, David Franco and Aline Brosh McKenna, the dream team back together again from the first movie, did not know that it would be this prescient. But like having this movie release the week that Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez Bezos are like sponsoring, funding, bankrolling the Met Gala, and like Amazon is essentially like branding the Met Gala.
Yes.
Is crazy when you consider the fact that the Justin Theroux and Lucy Liu characters in this are, I think, more meant to be Jeff Bezos and his first wife.
His ex, yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's such a one-to-one comparison. They don't even really like bother to hide it, which is fine. But then it's like, then that just like infected fashion more.
Yes.
Than you could have ever anticipated.
No, it's literally like happening in front of our eyes. And they were shooting this probably like a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Right. So I think it became like a sharper critique of truly like fashion of the moment. Again, like the Met Gala right now.
Yes. Happening as we are recording.
Then maybe it was written to be.
Yeah. I also took him as like, it's very much Jeff Bezos, but like his personality read so Elon Musk-y to me, and the like humor and inability to take and or understand a joke that is grating. But, and I thought that that character, when he's first introduced, one, didn't recognize Justin Theroux in him himself, because he looks crazy in this.
His forehead is
you could land a fucking airplane on that thing.
Quite large.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Scott. That's, I want to give her her flowers.
Well, because she gave a lot back to charity, basically.
She's doing the Lucy Liu thing of being like, I have all this money, and like now I'm going to become like a philanthropist, basically.
Right. But at the same time, I think like where this movie is so smart is that like while Runway is this is literally a spoiler for the end of the movie, but like while Runway continues to exist, I think like the understanding that this is like temporary and probably won't last forever is also like so important, because it's kind of bleak as well. Be like, these are just little baby steps we're taking to survive for now, and we know that another bad thing is going to come along quite soon, or this person will change how much they want to be involved.
Yes, they've saved Runway from the jaws of death, but there's no guarantee that it will continue. And the idea that all of these publications, even the most storied ones, are at the whimsy of essentially like, you know, large companies just buying and selling assets, as opposed to a piece of art in and of themselves. And The Devil Wears Prada, the original, is of course always about the relationship between art and commerce, because what I love about the evolution of the sequel is that even though Miranda and Andy are still at odds, like, the first movie is about how Andy wants to be a serious journalist and doesn't consider fashion serious at all and thinks it's beneath her. And in this movie, it's like, any port in a storm, dude. We need to be on the same side because like fate has shoved us on the same
lifeboat. We gotta work together. Yes.
Yeah. And so I think that like there's no really like, the first movie doesn't deal at all with ownership. Mm-mm. Of Runway. Like, Runway isn't of itself like this titan.
It's a brand. Vogue. That's it. Yeah.
And now it's like we have it has been exposed to the general public how fragile these like very iconic brands and institutions like can be, and that like things can shutter in an instant just because like people moved money around for whatever reason.
Right.
And I just think that's like a great core theme to build your movie on.
Totally.
When it's about fashion, something that people consider in general quite frivolous, but is low key the closest accessible, like widespread, you know, cultural thing that we have to like fine goods right now.
Totally. Yeah. I think it also is like so transposable. Like, I think like you look at the themes of this movie specifically, but you can graft it onto so many other industries or things that are happening at our times. Just like a quick one step over is like weird comp, but like fast food, low key, where I feel like that is something that has like completely fallen off and changed within the past 20 years. Or you look at like the film, like there's so many industries that are being affected by these things and corporations just buying things and selling things in hands, just changing things that were the backbone of contemporary society. And so looking back on it now, like I think this movie does have a sort of sad look at where we are as a culture, because culture is disappearing from our literal hands in front of us, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I think back when I used to have Entertainment Weekly come in the mail, and that was the most excited I would ever be that week, having like that magazine in my hand, you know? And like I don't feel that anymore, because obviously nothing gets delivered in the mail.
Right. Tangibility.
Yeah.
And I think that it's so interesting because we're living in a rapidly more consumerist society. I'm on TikTok. The amount of like QVC type stuff that gets like hawked to me just scrolling my TikTok feed is crazy. Like, we're more consumerist than ever, but we also value tangibility less than ever.
Totally. Would you say like it's even like a passion less as well, like the care of something versus just the like quick grab of it, you know what I mean?
The dopamine hit, of course. But I think that like there's a scene in The Devil Wears Prada 2 that really kind of puts that like juxtaposition into perspective, which is when Emily is talking about Dior and she's like, you know, it used to be that nobody could afford like really high fashion Dior, and then like, you know, accessible high fashion was like $300. And now it's like everybody has a purse, but that purse is $3,000.
Right.
Like everybody wants it. Nobody can afford it.
Yes.
And like everybody craves the tangibility, but that tangibility comes at such a high cost because it's been devalued as like a cultural cachet, not even a cultural cachet, like an asset, I guess is a better way to put it. It's just, but it's so like, I think it's so interesting movie about fashion be like, we're in a crisis, people. Like fashion itself is like at risk. Fashion itself is under the art umbrella, which it is. And like, it's at risk of disappearing. There is a whole sequence of this film that takes place under The Last Supper. And it is essentially like, we need patrons of the arts.
Yes.
Or you don't get anything.
That and journalism. I think like the two are inextricably tied, because I think like the opening scene of the movie is basically Andy's entire team getting fired from their magazine jobs, which literally has happened like four times
this year.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't a new thing. Like, we've had so many guests on this very podcast who have been let go because of this specific thing, you know? Like, these are dying forms that need help, and this movie like tackling that head on is kind of one of the most like radical things, especially coming from like the Disney Corporation, you know?
Is this technically I guess there's a 20th century studios. Look at that.
I know. This is, I think, a classic case of like really shitty trailer and movie over delivering on expectations.
I have thoughts about this. You go. And
because
then I have thoughts.
I thought the trailer was stinky caca, and I thought it was going to be about like Meryl Streep slash like Miranda Priestley having dementia or something. Because
you did not actually think that. That was a stupid thing.
I know, but like I bought into that when it first caught.
You did not.
For a
did
second,
you?
For a bit. And then but
that was stupid of you.
I know. But the trailer itself also was just like not good. And it didn't look good. It had a weird tone. Like, it didn't feel like it actually like knew what it was. The posters, I was like, okay, this is fun. But then like maybe just because I was somewhat insulated and only kind of saw the trailer in a movie theater, so I was going in with kind of bottom floor expectations. And this sort of just superseded everything that I thought and tackled a 20 years later story in quite a, I think, brilliant way. And I'm seeing like a lot of critiques online, which I'm sure we'll dig into, because I have a lot of like counter arguments to, I think, what people are somewhat critiquing. But what did you think? Did you, were you in on the trailer or?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think that I, after walking out of this movie and based on the box office, it's really nice that we're talking about this movie on a Monday. Sometimes like with the schedule lines up, we have to talk about it like before the box office is
Thursday,
in. And this is ostensibly a podcast partially about box office. I think based on the box office, my like thesis, my hypothesis that I'm about to say is accurate, is that the trailers got people to the theater. The quality of the film got the people that didn't like the trailers to the theater. I think that the trailers are in general more like accessible and targeted to like the people that only go to the movies once a year.
Right.
Come back. See everything. Yeah. Oh my God. A little more key jangly. It's gonna be fun. Yes, exactly. And like, I am fine with a key jangly trailer if the film can like back it up. And I think that like, if I had to guess, I would say there was a calculated PR effort to be like, because all the critics got to see this thing. Like, it was not influencer focused. I mean, no. It was everybody, but, but like,
it had an actually, the reviews came out early enough that people could actually see, versus it wasn't a reviews are dropping Thursday, the movie's coming out on Thursday.
Exactly, the movie's coming out Thursday. Yeah. So I believe that there was a targeted PR push to be like, the trailer will be getting the people that don't read reviews and will make sure that the reviews come out early enough that the people that were not sold on the trailer are going, are the ones that are reading the reviews.
Right.
And then going to go do it. Like, it's almost like they, you know, I'm sure there's like a small overlap, but they got like two entirely different bubbles of people. For sure.
I mean, I don't know how your crowd was. It was fucking full. It was packed.
Oh yeah, it was packed. Lots of
the liveliest crowd I've ever had in a while.
So many girls group, like groups of like moms or like ladies' night.
We had the total opposite group then.
Really?
I was almost primarily gay men. It was.
Oh my God. Wait, slay though. That's really fun.
It was like gay men from 35 to like 60. That was with, the whole theater.
The
it was so, I mean, we covered the demo then.
Yeah, but it
was so funny because like when a specific, which was my Letterboxd review, but like when a specific moment happened, it genuinely was like every gay man in that crowd, like, shh. Like we all like, there was a collective consciousness that was acting as one.
When you realized that Lady Gaga was going to be in this film?
Yes, it was when they revealed Lady Gaga and the entire crowd just went, and then silence.
That's so funny.
It was
incredible. I was watching this, and when Nigel's like, well, John Legend is out because he wants us to fly his piano, so Miranda, you have to make a call. And I was like, oh, it must be Gaga, right? Because she did the song.
I didn't even know she...
I know brand synergy.
I didn't
synergy.
Even know she did the song. I was just like not
Jordan,
paying attention.
Where have you been?
I have been busy and depressed.
Fair enough. Sorry I asked. I was way more plugged into this. I was like, oh, it has to be Gaga. Like,
see, I had no
she
idea.
She did the song.
I was gagged. I was gooped. I was Gaga'd.
Did you recognize her song when
of course,
they first landed in Milan and you were like, oh?
Well, still, no. Gaga. I was just like, who's it going to be?
Oh.
I was fully just like, well, because I was so pessimistic kind of throughout this whole movie, just like, when is it going to let me down? That like, I was like, okay, who's the fucking low rent celeb that they're going to have in here? Because like, when you go to Miranda's place in the Hamptons, the celebs are like, fine. They're not like anyone who I was like gagged by.
But yes. I will say, like I said, I am interested in fashion. I do not consider myself like a fashion expert. Like I was like, oh, that's Winnie Harlow. Like that's John Baptiste. And then I was, well, I guess that makes sense. Cause like because Kenneth Branagh is a musician. So there's like musician celebrities there.
When it was Jenna Bush Hager though, I was like, what are you doing here?
I don't understand what that.
Exactly. So I was just like, it's not going to be a Dua Lipa. I was like, is it going to be like a fuck? Like, I didn't know who I was thinking, but I was like, it's going to be some like B minus C plus tier celeb. And then it was when it was like A plus the god, I was like, holy shit, this is the greatest day of my life.
But, here's what I would like to say since we're talking about Lady Gaga, which is that obviously, it is a hilarious scene in which Lady Gaga plays a fictionalized version of herself who has beef with Miranda Priestly over a cover. Fucking loved it. I love when Lady Gaga gets to be a diva because I think that she is famously like a relatively like chill
person. The nicest person ever. Yeah.
So I was like, I love that she gets to be like high maintenance. And then also what we're reminded that like people don't actually get along with Miranda in the celebrity world. Because I think that that's something that like in the first movie, it's like, well, everyone wants to impress Miranda. And now we're sort of seeing like, again, the HR complaints, the slight collapse of Miranda's like own persona.
Okay. This is good.
But also when Lady Gaga got on that rotating catwalk and started singing, I fell in love with The Shape of a Woman. I was like, she is giving bisexual in a way that she low-key has not given in a moment.
She was
singing that thing and looking at those models. And I was like, this is as good as Harry Styles at the Victoria's Secret fashion show. Or should I say Taylor Swift at the Victoria's Secret fashion show? If you know, you know. I really love that they had a female artist singing about like the beauty of the female body, but not in like a yes girl boss way, in a kind of sexy way.
Yes, that's one of my big notes, is just like Gaga literally looking at women. And it's just like, we haven't had that in a bit.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, and when it's nice to see.
Will she get to play a lesbian on screen?
Well, you could argue joke her, you know, was she really in love with him? Who's to say?
I was more thinking House of Gucci when she was like, I wanted to kiss Penelope Cruz in that mud bath. And we were like, okay, Gaga.
Good point.
I mean, can't blame you. No. But like,
it just also made me like be like, remember when Lady Gaga was on the big screen in a good movie? Like, what a beautiful thing when she is just acting. It's so nice. I love her so much.
The whole scene is like one take of her kind of just like in the mirror. She looks fucking fabulous. She's so good.
Her tats look great. She looks so cool. I love her. Yeah. No, it's like she is, I feel like, on an incredible run. Like the post-Chromatica, basically like mayhem forward run that she's been on and everything that she's been doing is just A+. It's incredible stuff.
Yeah. And I think that like it's a thoughtful cameo. The first movie has like a shit ton of like cameos as well, which is there's always going to be cameos. The but Giselle, I was thinking about like this is a quintessential movie for grownups.
Yeah. 100%.
It is not a romance. It is not a comedy. It's not a hard comedy, I guess I should say.
Like, yeah.
It is a chick flick in the most like the pure sense of the way, world. Though. But that's what like chick flicks didn't just mean rom-coms. They meant like movies
women-led.
Centering and starring women. And it's been so long since we had one of those. And even though this is technically intellectual property, I was like, if every piece of intellectual property was looked at with this much care, I would be way... Like, I would be a way easier sell
100%
on the top 10 movies every single year.
Because this is an adult movie for adults who have like thinking power.
It's a movie for adults. Yeah. Like, I really, it's so nice to see a movie for adults. There's so much TV for adults out there.
Which is why I feel like some of the critiques of it, speaking to your point on Miranda changing, I am like having beef. I'm Miranda beasting on because it's
some tech bro really does call her Miranda Beastly.
It's incredible,
which is
stuff.
Crazy.
Yeah, but to your point, I think it's like this movie in the intervening 20 years, our culture has gotten like worse, and our characters have adapted to that, and living through that. And Miranda herself would not be the same Miranda as she was in 2006. Even this is like the whole Star Wars, The Fucking Last Jedi thing. You know what I mean? Like where people were like, my character,
assassination.
But like I was listening to a podcast where they were like, Miranda's not as mean as she was or all this shit. I'm like, one, Miranda is still throwing daggers. You're not a visionary, you're a vendor. Has to be like one of the greatest takedowns ever. Like
I screamed.
Period. And
like I was gooped. I was gagged.
Exactly. I was like, like she still Miranda. Has the sauce, but also like this is a culture in which she can't be like all, she just can't be laying it on the line. So when you do have her daggers, they're great. But at the same time, I think the HR parts of it, which you were already like had mentioned, are also great. And you see the Miranda in that she's just trying to adapt to this world and is figuring it out. Like she wouldn't be trying to beast on everyone when her entire industry is collapsing. Which she Miranda, kind of calls out to Andy, you know?
Exactly. Miranda hangs up her own coat now.
Right.
I believe.
Suicide joke is one of the best jokes in the movie.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about killing other people. yet. But also, like, I think that it, oh God, it really is a Last Jedi situation, isn't
yes.
it? The change in Miranda is called out within the text of the film.
Exactly.
Which in and of itself means that it's an intentional thematic choice. I feel like when yes. people are like character assassination, it seems to be that like it just sprung out of nowhere with no thought. Yes. And that's not what this is. This is Andy being like, Miranda, why aren't you... like, why are you folding to these people? And that the idea is that, like, she can no longer purse her lips and cause someone to change a full fashion line. As Nigel says in the first movie, her opinion is the only one that matters.
Right.
And in this film, her opinion is not even close to being the only one that matters. And that is sad. Like,
yes.
that is, as, you know, cruel and difficult as she is and continues to be, and we love her for it, like, yes, queen, that in and of itself is supposed to be something sad.
Right.
We're supposed to miss it.
Yes. I mean, there's a whole point where she basically goes to our quote-unquote, like, villains of the movie and is trying to appease to them to have some semblance of, like, understanding about the fashion industry and to, like, retain a semblance of creative independence. And they just kind of brush her aside. And it's devastating.
Because they don't care.
No.
And I do think that they're like, it's fun to see Miranda knocked down a peg. For example, them walking past first class.
Great.
And into the economy cabin.
Great. It's a comp. Like, that's funny.
So good. And it's
yes.
not too long. And it's not too
no.
drawn out. And it's sharp. And it's
yes.
fast. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah. And people are, of course, complaining. They're like, Miranda would never. And I'm like, one, it's sort of like, I think when you're in that situation and the company's downsized, you have to do that.
She doesn't have a choice, bro.
Exactly. And two, it's funny. It's yeah. a movie.
It's really funny. Why don't we talk about, before we talk about the mainstay players, you want
sure.
to talk about some of the new faces?
Please. Yes. What divas are you thinking
chiefly
of?
Chiefly... my girl, Simone Ashley,
okay.
Whose yes. role in this movie is really just to be there and look beautiful and fashionable.
She's always in the background doing this.
Jordan is smizing for
I'm
the listeners.
I'm just
at
like
home.
Serving a little.
Smizing.
Yeah.
She has such a great face. She has such a great sense of fashion as well. She's rocking it. But basically, she is the new Emily and Caleb Heron is the new Andy.
There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your outside.
She's
yes.
very cute.
Not enough screen time, I would say.
If I had it my way, which brings us to another new character and my chief fucking complaint about this movie. If I had it my way, all of the scenes with a Mr. Real Estate Developer would be left on the cutting room floor and there would be 20 minutes of Simone Ashley and Caleb Heron doing assistant shit.
Sure.
Why the fuck do I care about some man renovating New York buildings?
Okay.
I can't stand his ass. Once again.
A lot of people are mad about this.
me included.
I don't care. I did find him a little charming because I think he's gay and he wants Hugh Jackman. So good for him. And two, I think that the
incredible take, Jordan. Incredible take.
And I think that the thematic importance of like the renovations of old New York City buildings into sort of soulless condos is actually like so potent to the themes of this movie that I'm like, it's thematically resonant with the overarching feelings versus just like, I understand the whole like, give Andy a boyfriend or whatever, like I could live or live without it, but I think when she is explicitly sort of calling out and they talk about the buying of old buildings, it is something that I am kind of mad about on a daily basis. So I mm-hmm. liked that because I think you see this on Twitter where people just buy fucking houses and renovate them and they take the fucking soul out of it and it just looks like every fucking cookie cutter ass fucking apartment building now, and I like miss when things had their own sense of identity. So I liked
that
part.
You don't
part.
Have strong feelings about this at all. Yes.
I'm gathering that.
Yes, but here's my counterpoint. Tracy Thomas already in this movie.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Give that to her.
Yeah, she needed more scenes.
Because so here's my opinion on like, and I don't mean just like, oh, we need romance, but like I'm just going to say the additional Andy storyline of it all is that the number one most interesting thing about Andy is how she interacts with like the professional world.
Yes.
Even like both in the original and in this, her personal relationships feel extremely tacked on. I think part of it is just that like that's not what we're here for, and that's like not what is interesting, but also it's so clearly not a priority to how the character is written that it just sort of has no choice but to feel like an afterthought.
Right. However, it can feel like a nothing.
Here's what I love is like I'm very affected in the first movie about Miranda having kids, and
I loved that. Yeah,
when she the iconic scene where Andy shows up to her hotel room and she has no makeup on in the first movie, and she's saying, I'm getting divorced again. And she's like, I'm just so sad for the girls. Like, what am I going to do about the girls? And I always like really love that. And that's like her weak spot. And it's so wonderful in this movie that she has like a nice supportive husband in Kenneth Branagh.
I love him.
Who like lets her do her thing. And like that is a wonderful like conclusion to her arc of like not having like male peers besides Nigel Slay who like actually appreciate her.
Right.
And I'm like, yes, get that musician husband.
Yeah.
Who will play quartet. At your boss's funeral.
crazy business doing that. But I think that
you
the Branagh addition's great.
Need it. Yeah. I love Branagh, and I think that like he's so good. I just love when he like shows up and puts in two scenes.
He
and
looks
like,
so good too.
He's
like
so hot.
Like everyone in this movie, like genuinely Bisexual Panic the movie, like everyone is so fucking hot. It's crazy.
Everyone is so hot. And I think that like he was the romantic evolution and inspiration that I needed as a counterpoint to Emily Blunt and Justin Theroux, who were in the sort of like weird... they're in the kind of like PR marriage for lack of a better
term. I think Emily's arc is like low-key so depressing because like she is someone who's like so desired like the aspirational the sort of fame of it all, and like how willing she is to sort of sell her soul out to try to get that is really bleak, especially like when you see like the machinations that she does and like the ways in which she sort of plays along with Justin Theroux and how obviously miserable that relationship is. You know,
you're not a visionary, you're a vendor. I think that Emily as like a deeply insecure person is such a great like character trait, because there are a lot of people in like fashion and these very like these industries are so tough, they're so exacting, they're so like you're under a microscope, both like your looks and your personality, regardless of whether you're a model or not. I mean, she has that line she throws in where she's like, I think I should be the runway cover star, because like, you know, most owners aren't a sample size, or like most editors in chief aren't a sample size, but like I am. It's a deeply, she's like a deeply, deeply insecure character.
Yes.
But just to wrap up the romance thread, it's like you have the bad romance, rah, rah. You have the good version. And if you want the thematic sense of here's what we should do with old buildings, that's what Tracy Thomas is for.
And by the way,
she's like 50 times more alive than this man,
Mr.
who I'm
Aussie.
Sure is a very nice...
Patrick Bramall, a very nice
Aussie actor. I do love your take that he's gay and in love with Hugh Jackman.
Well, I think that Andy is recognized... Here we go. I think that Andy is clocking his gay tea. Hey, mama, I also need a beard. So if you beard for me, I can beard for you. Because, like, look, I'm being honest with you. I watched this movie and Andy has, like... Even in the first movie, like, I guess it's a little bit more with Adrian Grenier and his fucking grilled cheese or whatever.
His Jarlsberg.
Like, and, like, the, you know, her maybe cheating, whatever, that whole stuff is kind of fun. But I feel like in this movie, she's so low-key committed to the work in Miranda and Emily that, and, like, especially her and Emily in this movie feel like a ship that
the
I was having
Yuri is
big,
here.
Just, like, this is not a straight woman in journalism energy. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is a lesbian who is thrilled to be back at it.
And
you know?
Let me just say, girl, the vests and the tweed
exactly.
are not helping your cause.
No.
And the Bjork t-shirt.
Not at all.
I see you.
Yes. It's crazy.
I just think that, like, listen, if I was writing The Devil Wears Prada, I wouldn't care about the romance plotline either. I just think her character and the way that she's written and the way that like the movie is structured around her.
Yeah.
We just have no time for it.
No.
So
and this thing is moving at a really fast clip too.
I only bring it up because this is a nice, quick movie. It's like 2 hours with credits. And I think that it would feel overly long if there was another chunk that was like whatever the Simone, Ashley, and Caleb Heron world.
Yeah.
But that was the world that I missed and that I was like, I want to see how like the younger generation are coming up being like, what is this world that I now live in? And I loved the idea of Simone Ashley being like a extremely competent assistant.
Okay, I hear you. And I so hard disagree on wanting to see more of the assistant world because I'm like, I lived it. I do not want to see it.
But that's like the first movie. That is what I love about it. Yeah, I love the assistant world.
I was just, it was almost so triggering. Like the,
almost too
all
triggering.
The assistant stuff where I was just like, I don't know. I'm good. Like, I'm like, let me live in this, like, I'll live in the depression of our industries collapsing, but
the
depression of scheduling and not being able to go to the bathroom. I'm like, that's so much worse.
How did you feel when you watched the first movie? It was a different because you had already seen it.
Yes.
So it was like you had already had time to prepare yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
We probably mentioned this when we did that episode, but The Devil Wears Prada, as soon as I said that I like wanted to go into like film, that was like one of the first things that my mom had me watch.
So
she
funny.
Was like, okay, well, you should watch this if you're going into like, if you want to be like a big corporate girl.
That's so good. I think since we're just talking about like the office environment, I think that what they did with Tucci's character, I really loved in this movie. I think sort of the elevation of him to being one of the more like, obviously he's in the previous one a lot, but I feel like I love his incorporation in this. And
he's more of a plot device in the first film.
And in this, he's a real character. I mean, we lose his
gaze. Get rid of Andy's boyfriend. Give me Tucci's boyfriend.
Right.
Where is Nigel's nice husband?
That's one big note that I have is like, just like a scene. Let me see him cooking pasta for a boy or something.
I was going to say, give me the Hugh Grant, Daniel Craig.
Exactly.
Knives Out.
Exactly. Two, I think that the one time that I cried in this feature film, The Devil Wears Prada 2, is when Stanley Tucci said to Anne Hathaway, forever my girl. Literally. I just burst into tears. I was not expecting it. It fucking killed me.
That made me tear up right now. I think you can.
Oh my God, Brooke's teared up.
It's just so. In a movie that is all about a toxic mentor-mentee relationship, as you know, my favorite kind of relationship, I eat it up every time. I think that having a mentor who genuinely cares about you and sees your talent and helps you fit in a place that you don't know, but is still honest with you. I'm obsessed with it.
It's like the healthiest thing because they can go back and forth with each other. They can tease each other. And at the end of the day, they like still deeply care about each other though. And that's what matters. And she, I think the whole arc then of Miranda recognizing Tucci is then just like paid off in spades because then what she says to him is also so beautiful when she sort of then like recognizes that she took him for granted, you know, because like we've all been saying that since the first movie, but
yeah. And I think like what's so great about the first movie is you need Andy to leave the fashion world with the recognition that she didn't actually like wasn't able to change things
right
in the fashion world, but that she was maybe changed for
herself
a little bit better
because
of her relationship with Miranda, even if she doesn't want to admit it.
Would you say she's been changed for good?
Which feels more, you could say that, you could. This feels more like a coda, like a more like definitive ending to like Miranda's
story. 100%,
and that the conclusion of Miranda's arc needs to include being like, Nigel, you are my number one boy.
I'm gonna kill myself.
I love Nigel.
When he gives his... Okay, but the thing is, what's funny is like when he gives his speech, I was expecting it to be this sort of big thing, and it's just kind of like, we're gathered here today. We're seeing some fashion.
Here's Runway.
Yeah. Like, I thought it was going to be this big emotional speech, and it's kind of a nothing burger, but that's also fine because it's not about what the speech is. It's about him being able to give the speech.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
And sharing the stage with Lady Gaga, is there anything gayer?
I would kill myself.
Maybe the only thing gayer than Stanley Tucci and Lady Gaga sharing a runway is Meryl Streep and Lady Gaga talking to each sharing other a scene via a dressing room mirror.
Yes.
I mean,
should
please.
We actually need to talk about Meryl because I think that this is an incredible return for her. We have not seen Meryl Streep on the big screen in years.
I think
because like Don't Look Up was her, I believe her last, well, it was that and The Cruise Ship Boat, which I enjoy. Why am I blanking on the name of it? We're All Talking. Look Who's Talking.
Let Them All Talk.
Let Them All Talk.
Yeah. That was HBO, though.
Exactly. And so, like, we haven't seen her on the big screen in a while. She's been doing, like, some TV, like Only Murders, etc., but not a ton of it. So, it has actually felt like there's been an absence of Meryl Streep in the cinematic conversation after a while. And not to be like you forget that the greatest actress of all time is the greatest actress of all time, but when she was on screen, she enters, and obviously this is like part and parcel with Miranda herself, but like there is an energy to Meryl that is just incalculable. It's just, she knows how to own a scene, and seeing her back on the big screen, getting all these laugh lines, feeling these emotional beats, it was enthralling to see it again, you know?
Absolutely. And I really do think that like, I love when she does like weird projects. I think that she should do whatever she wants, but I was just looking at her filmography and like, you know, including TV projects. The last like big screen film that she had was Little Women, which she rocks in. But then it's, you have like Let Them All Talk, streaming, good, but streaming, The Prom, disaster. The less said, the better. Don't Look Up. I actually don't really like her in that movie. Then nothing, and like just a couple of voice cameos.
Yeah, The Laundromat, which is Netflix. Mary Poppins Returns.
Yeah.
Mamma Mia 2, like, not in, basically.
And then this year she had a couple of voice
roles. She was in Hoppers in a great role. She's great in Hoppers.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah.
But again, that's not... But I love that. I think that like what I have always really appreciated about Meryl Streep is that particularly after she was like, I can only be nominated for so many Oscars, like, what am I going to do with the rest of my career? She was like, fuck it. Like, I'll just kind of do whatever. Like, she's very gettable in a good way. Like, for sure. I say that as like truly just a compliment.
No. Yeah. She's having fun. She's divorced.
She's having fun.
She's having fun.
She's still dating Martin Short.
Yeah.
I think.
Like, coolest, hottest couple ever. Yeah.
It's so great. Like, even her rolling up in Big Little Lies, where it was like, done, done, done. We have Meryl fucking Streep. And then you get there and you're like, she's doing crazy shit.
She's yelling at a table. She's throwing an ice cream.
She's saying, no, I don't think so. Like,
crazy business.
That season of television is so ridiculous. Like, Big Little Lies season 2 is so stupid.
Unhinged.
But so her showing up and you're like, oh my god, this is like a serious kind of like really interesting new take on melodrama. And season 2, they're like, nah, bro.
She's like, watch.
This is crazy.
Just kidding. That was the inkling of like the morning show seeping into it, you know?
I think...
Yeah,
but no, it's like, go for it.
It's like the complete polar opposite, though, of like Anne Hathaway, who like disappeared 10 years ago and now is having probably my year of beasting and relaxation, where she is in 5 movies this year month.
We are already engraving the QQ.
Best
year
of the year
award has to go.
Should we just
to Anne Hathaway?
To the Anne Hathaway 2026 award.
It was the Bradley Cooper Best of the Year award, I think is what it's sitting
over.
At.
Done.
Okay. I would like to just run down what Anne Hathaway is up to this
Please.
Year.
She's famously, cooking.
Famous to me and to you. She put all this in her Instagram bio when people were like, God damn, girl.
No, yeah. It's kind of the coolest flex ever.
She is in 5 movies in 2026.
So fucking sick.
Mother Mary, where she plays, of course, the titular Mother Mary.
Mother Mary.
The Devil Wears Prada 2, The Odyssey.
Playing Penelope.
The End of Oak Street, which is this weird sci-fi, like
Looks
David Rubber Mitchell film. Yeah.
What and if then, dinosaurs?
And then Verity.
The
so
one
it's
I'm
like,
least excited for.
I'm actually really excited because the book is so bad, but I feel like it's going to be like The Housemaid, where I went into The Housemaid being like, I'm going to hate this. And then I came out of it being like, that movie actually like rocked my socks. It was so ridiculous.
Oh, she's the titular Verity.
She's actually kind of like not in it, if we're going by the book, it's mostly Dakota Johnson and Josh Hartnett, but there are like a bunch of diary entries. So what I'm guessing is that like she's going to be in a bunch of flashbacks.
Oh, but she's dead in it.
She's like the dead wife. She is literally like the Rebecca.
I just read the log line. I was like, okay, yes.
She is the Rebecca of Rebecca.
Lowend uncovers Verity's disturbing truths while residing at the Crawfords' home to ghostwrite her last novel.
Like, by the way, Verity is truly just like, what if 2026 Rebecca, but stupid.
Sort of seems to be like the Colleen Hoover thing. Just
it's
like,
the classic.
What it's if logline, so, but stupid?
What's so wild about Verity, though, is that like it's more of like a Freda McFadden. Like, it's a thriller.
Oh.
Colleen Hoover is mostly known for her romance. Verity is a thriller. It's just like a soapy book club thriller.
I mean, Nick Antosca wrote it, and I like Nick Antosca.
Oh, I'm straight up excited because, yeah. Like I said, I read The Housemaid. I was like, this thing sucked. I saw the movie. I was like, that actually kind of whipped. And I think that I'm going to go through the exact same thing. So I'll be
Josh Hartnett. I'll be sad.
But I just want to like, it's very cool how the five movies that Anne Hathaway is doing this year. That's so crazy.
She's been working.
Are like five completely different genres, five different audiences. It's like, she's like, I got the film bros, I got the wine moms, I got the gay men that want to see Devil Wears Prada 2, I got the other gay men that want to see Mother Mary.
Like, exactly. She's got the whole LGBTQ demographic on lock.
Yeah. And then she's got like the, it's crazy.
Verity's for then like the girls, you know?
Verity's for the wine girls. Club. The wine club moms. Yeah. But I think that like even her last film before that was The Idea of You in 2024, which she's so fucking good in. Like, she's so great. I mean, her
slamming the MacBook down is iconic moment.
One of the best memes. I was really reminded watching The Devil Wears Prada 2 just how versatile of an actress Anne Hathaway is, but also how much I love her portrayal of Andy.
Yes.
Which seems very similar to like the bad faith persona of her.
Yes.
Which is like, she's a try hard, she cares too much, like, oh my God. Chill out, dude. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
And I love Andy Sachs as a character because she reminds me of myself.
Do you have big Andy Sachs energy? Yes. This movie, I feel like, also like allows Anne Hathaway to spread her wings in fun ways where she's like very dramatic at times. She's got good comedy beats. Like, there is a lot in this that is not just like classic chick flick, if you want to put it in that box, etc. Like, she is actually capitally acting in this and is doing a great job and looks incredible. It's just a reminder. I think this is like, I saw Mother Mary, and that is like such a chamber piece between her and Michaela Cole, and I think Michaela Cole is kind of the one in that movie that's the runaway star in it, because she's kind of the more diva, haunted girlfriend,
like,
basically
sort of like the meatier.
The meteor
part.
Yes. Like, and Anne Hathaway is sort of just like the sad pop star.
To be an icon. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And in this, it's actually a star vehicle for her. And you do remember that this is why she is one of our best stars. You know, like, you see why she was opening movies and continues to open movies to this day.
Yep. Yep.
Like, in the fucking trailer for the David Rothenberg Mitchell movie, it's just her. Like, Ewan McGregor's there, but like, he doesn't have any lines. It's just her.
It's awesome.
I would do the same.
But the thing is, like, you look at, again, like a movie for grownups, like something that is like a very accessible comedy, but does not feel the need to, like, I don't know, like, I actually felt like I was engaged in this fucking movie sitting in the theater.
Yeah.
Everybody gets to act, and that is just like what you should be able to do.
Totally.
In a film for general audiences.
Yeah.
You get to play a range of emotions. What a fucking concept.
Yeah.
Like, because I was also reminded of Emily Blunt, who I love, but delightful. I think that, like, I don't love when she's kind of in like quirky girlfriend mode.
Hit me with what you're thinking.
The Fall Guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, I think that she's better when she's just a bitch.
I, like, low-key agree. Also, like, I mean, this feels like a definitive role for her. Like, her as Emily is iconic, you know?
I really think that, like, she should have been nominated. Obviously, Meryl Streep was nominated for an Oscar, deserved. But, like, I think that Emily Blunt should have been nominated for an Oscar.
I agree.
the Devil Wears Prada.
And I think she's great in this. I agree with you. Like her, I didn't love the smashing machine, but I love when she tries to kill herself multiple times in the smashing machine.
I did not love that. I thought that was fucking awful.
It's so funny. She's just like, what if I had a gun now,
dude,
bitch?
I hate it. You're way higher on that movie than I am.
I am not even high. I just am like, that's kind of funny.
But was it meant to be?
Probably
not. And that therein lies
the issue.
The problem.
Yeah, but I feel so on Emily Blunt though, this feels like, I mean, what? She kind of hasn't had a major hit in
a minute. She's done, like, she is a definitive leading lady.
Like
usually
all the quiet
paired
places.
With somebody else.
She loves Mary Poppins.
But I think that I generally like her, but I don't always love her. And I love her in this. And I would like to love her in everything.
I agree. No,
that's what
fully
I have to
agree.
Say about that.
I forgot
like,
that.
Like, I haven't really loved her in something since the OG Quiet Place, which I think she's very good in.
Do we need to see? We've talked about Wild Mountain Time. That is a movie I do eventually want to watch.
What if he was a bee?
Yeah, what if he was a bee? It's a cool idea.
Do you remember when we found out what that movie was about?
Yeah.
That was one of maybe like the top 10 days on the internet.
Yeah, that was a really good day on film Twitter,
let's say. Yeah. Film Twitter specifically, because there have been some crazy big internet days. But everyone realizing what Wild Mountain Time was about on the same day.
Iconic.
Amazing. The man thinks he's a bee.
Good.
What are you going to do?
Sold.
Hate when that happens.
but her in like Edge of Tomorrow, Sicario, you know, like she is, she's got the sauce. It's just, you got to find the right vehicle for her.
That's the thing is that I don't always love her and I want to always love her. I'm pretty stoked for Disclosure Day.
Oh, hyped. Yeah.
I think it looks fun. I was scrolling through Letterboxd, seeing if anybody else had said this or if it would be in poor taste for me to bring up. But then Fran Hoffner, former
Icon.
Guest of the pod and correct opinion haver, said that she thought that Justin Theroux and Emily Blunt's faces were working very well for their characters in meta-textual ways. And I was like, great. I feel like I can mention that because I agree. And that, like, they both look pretty plasticky, but it works pretty well for the people that they are supposed to be playing. And I just remember that was like kind of like a weird point of discourse when the Disclosure Day trailer came out. Is there like Spielberg, master of the close-up, hired Emily Blunt? And it's like, she's a newscaster. It makes
sense. Right. She's supposed to look like that. Also, like when she does the voice thing, I stand up and salute. It's awesome. When she
it's
starts
really
going, blacka, 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 or whatever the fuck it is.
That movie's going to be really fun.
It's going to be sick. But yes, no, I agree. I think also like she... This character, I like the change that they've done to her compared to where she was in 2006. It makes sense that she would go to be a vendor, so to speak. You know what I mean?
She is wants to be, she cares about the clothes.
Yes.
If Miranda cares about only, if Andy only cares about the art and Miranda is like the midpoint between the two of them, Emily is like, she only cares about the brand, like the branding, the clothes. Even when she works for Dior, everything that she wears is Dior branded. She has that insane Dior like sweatshirt situation
that like kind of has Dior popping out of that one.
She has like the t-shirt where it's like over her boobs, but it's so cute. Like, her outfits are great. No mistake,
she's slaying the house down
as
boots.
We mentioned, she shows up to a funeral in like a tiny veil.
It's incredible. It is like giving
amazing.
Euphoria energy at that point, honestly.
And I think that it makes, to your point, it makes total sense for her to be like, well, of course, like, I'm never gonna leave fashion. What is gonna like make this happen for me? Of course I'm gonna represent a brand as opposed to like an institution or a publication. And the idea is that she gets quote unquote demoted to Coach, which is still a luxury brand, but not the same luxury as like a Dior or a Chanel.
But Andy still wants to be her friend, which I think is an important selling point of their relationship, because like, even though she betrayed her, she's still like, I am deeply in love with you and I have a crush on you. I need to be your friend.
Yes. And then she recognizes that, again, Emily is a deeply insecure person who could probably use some positive female influence in her life.
I mean, she does have the iconic line where she's sitting in bed after talking on the phone with her husband and she's saying, "May the bridges I burn light my way,"
which while is tapping her little eye masks.
Iconic. So good.
Would you say that was your favorite quote of the film?
"May the bridges I burn?"
Yes.
No, I would say the one that is, "May my suicide be brief and painless." why can't I say that? I'm not talking about killing other people yet, is my favorite.
I'm a big fan of like body negative, and Simone Ashley just kind of gently shakes her head and she's like, "Body positive, but why?"
Incredible stuff by Meryl. Like, whoever thought Aline Brush McKenna to put Meryl Streep through like 2 hours of HR training?
Yes.
Masterpiece. Masterpiece.
And there is a truly like SNL worthy bit of her attempting to hang up her coat.
Yes. She's
which
so
is really
like,
funny.
Meryl Streep is so fucking funny.
She can do it all, people.
She is the most talented actress alive. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think that, like, again, she really has, I think what works about Miranda is that she only can have like one vulnerable moment per movie.
Yeah.
And the true vulnerable moment here is not to Andy. It's to Nigel when she says, "In a world where everyone shouts and complains and whines and screws up and tries to cover up, there's you. There's always been you." And like, that is the most important relationship to Miranda in this movie because it's the longest standing. And then when after she and Andy successfully sell the company to girl boss Lucy Liu, looking
incredible.
Beautiful.
Lucy Liu's credit came up on the credits, I was thinking of you. I was like, that's a Brooke Solomon call out right here.
I love her so much. And also, she's so hot.
No, it's crazy. She's serving so many looks in this.
Hot. Ever since Set It Up in like 2017, I've been like, I want you to be my mean boss.
She also, like, in this, I would say maybe looks the best she's looked also, even though she's like one of the hottest people alive.
I hate when she's in roles where they try to cover up her freckles. Her freckles are amazing, and she's like nice and freckly in this movie. She looks so great. But my point is, on the like car ride that Miranda and Andy have, like after they successfully sell the company to her, when that's sort of like, you know, the code of the movie where Miranda's like, "Hey, by the way, first of all, you should sell the book," which she should, and she should not take $350,000 as an
advance.
How
much should she take?
At least like mid six figure. I guess that is mid six figure, but like more like
500
plus.
Yeah.
It should be sold in a major deal.
Agreed.
On Publishers Marketplace.
Agreed. And also there has
to be. That's not that good of an advance.
There's also going to be a movie deal like instantly with that thing too.
Instantly.
Like you got to lock down those rights.
I do love that Aline Brosh McKenna was like, "Rachel Bloom girl, I got a role for you." Like that's her home girl. I love that.
I mean, like, it is funny who survived the first movie or the second movie, like this friend group and or otherwise, like who Aline Brosh McKenna brought in. Like in terms of Andy's old friend group, decimated. Mad Men guy is completely gone wherever the fuck
you
he went.
You only need Tracy Thomas.
Yes.
She was the only good one.
Oh, yeah. No,
she's
all
the rest
only one
that cared.
Poo. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's also, the only one that cared.
It also makes sense that Andy would break up with this boy because she's gay, so you know she hasn't
had
any serious partners.
She and Tracy Thomas should be
lit, like
they should just be married,
just have them together.
How hard
Why
would it be
not?
How hard would it be? I had a point. Oh, my point is that the coda is quite like harsh in the way that the coda at the end of the first movie is also quite harsh. They're like, "Don't be ridiculous, Andrea. Everybody wants this," because like that is what fuels Miranda and what keeps her going.
Yeah.
Is like, I love to work. I really do.
Yeah.
It's great. I think we could have used one more iconic montage. What do you think?
Like a close one? Or what are you thinking? Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Not necessarily, but like, okay, the first movie is very montage heavy. I can understand them being like, okay, we need to calm down.
But they are like also some of the best montages ever cut.
I was waiting for a song to like really hit that wasn't Vogue by Madonna. And
it did hit.
I don't know. Like, I was waiting and I didn't get my montage that I really wanted. But I will say Anne Hathaway is very good at walking / jogging through the streets of New York in fabulous outfits.
Literally no one better walking
no one
the
better.
Streets of New York than Anne Hathaway. No, I hear you. I think it's like just the movie is so not, maybe not interested in it, but it's like such a different movie. You know what I mean? That I think like it's less about the clothing montages in almost the fashion of it all, and or more about like the machinations of everything happening.
Yeah.
And sort of like
but
the bleakness
I love
of
the
it.
Fashion. Speaking
but
of
I also
fashion.
Hear you. Did I was yeah. asked if you have a favorite look.
Speaking of fashion. I have many. I Hit specifically me. Ranked Andy's outfits last time because she is like mostly the fashion star. Obviously it's like Emily dresses more kind of like loud, although in this she's gone very like Dior severe, like black and white only,
muted colors. Yes,
yeah. And Miranda is just like very elegant, but nothing.
Miranda's tassel,
not like,
forward,
the tassel jacket.
Are you pro or
tough.
anti?
I am anti.
Oh,
the
interesting
jacket. I although I do love when she shakes it when
That's,
she's going
I like
down
when
to the
she
cafeteria.
Shakes it's so funny. Wait, we have a cafeteria.
Amari, did you know we have a cafeteria?
Good stuff.
So my favorite Andy look, yeah. I think it was actually that scene, the cafeteria scene. She's in like, she's got like a vest with a skirt and a blouse.
Oh,
very hot.
Okay, sure.
Very my kind of thing, like sort of like modern androgynous menswear. But then in Milan at like the big finale before they go see Lucy Liu, she's in like a tweed gown. Yes. I fucking loved
it's a good
it.
Fit. It's a good
I
fit.
Think it's so good.
Did you like the Hamptons dress that she was obsessed with or no?
Yeah, no, I liked that. I thought okay. it was pretty. But I of course have a bottom Andy outfit, which is the sparkly monstrosity that she wears to go try to talk Justin Theroux.
I agree. I don't like that. I would also like no shit she got caught. Girl, if you're walking around like that.
Disgusting. It is horrible. It is like a sparkly jumpsuit tucked into like knee-high boots. I fucking
it's a bad look.
Hated it. And when Miranda's like, that better not be what you're wearing to the dinner. I was like, damn straight girl, you tell her.
Yeah, she
that thing is
her
so
ass.
Ugly.
Yeah.
There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your outside.
Did you have a favorite Andy look?
Any Andy look with like vest with pants is the hottest thing in the world.
Her period. Like final kind of like she's settled into her like in between
yes.
outfit at the very end.
Incredible
when it's
stuff.
Like a very like cashmere sweater looking vest with
would
jeans.
You say it's like a cerulean sweater?
It is cerulean. There's like a really quick callback when she's like walking through New York at the beginning of the movie where she sees people comparing
the florals for spring
belts.
Groundbreaking.
No, they're comparing belts. Yeah. There is also a florals for spring groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Well, the Easter eggs are good.
Just on that, it's so not key jangly in a way I love. It's really not just like, look at these Easter eggs, you know? Like, it's not a fucking, like, we're bringing back Wolverine! I'm just like, thank you. We're adults here. We don't need
Again,
that.
Again, it's a know? Movie for adults.
The Andy suits looks I love. I think that, honestly, Emily's wedding or funeral outfit is genuinely, like, one of the most iconic things I've seen. I just love that.
I mean, I also, she's slaying.
Her,
slaying
like,
harder than the dead guy.
Totally. But also her poster outfit I do also genuinely love. The like, I don't know how to describe it, but you know it when you see it on the poster.
The poster outfit.
Yeah.
It is a high-low dress.
Yes.
With gloves.
I'm
which is cool.
Kind of obsessed with that serve. I love a leg, you know, just a leg sticking forward, whatever.
I love leg.
Yeah. But the women, of course, always outserving the men in this movie. Stanley Tucci withstanding. But like Meryl's hair is doing incredible work in this. So many good flips and tosses. Mm-hmm. You
and
know?
The way that she just sort of like tucks it.
Yeah.
Nigel continues to be the only fashionable man in these movies. But it's because he's like the only male character.
Right.
It's so great.
For a dollar, name a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Because I think that like fashion is run on the backs of women and gay men.
Yes. I wish
like
that we should have probably had some more gay men stuff in this, but you know,
I mean,
it is what it is.
I'm a little bit upset that they weren't brave enough to give Nigel a nice husband.
That's where I do. You probably feel the more studio four quadrant approach of it.
It's,
you know,
that and Andy's boyfriend, again, not right. because of the theme, just because they were like, and of course, where's our romantic subplot? And I was like, yes. What the fuck do you mean?
Right. You don't need it. The romantic subplot is between Miranda and Andy, and Andy and Emily. It is a love
More
triangle.
More so, and Andy and Emily is...
The two of them on the boat together?
I get it.
Yeah.
And the, I don't want to hold your hand, but yes, oh, I will be friends.
That's romance.
And then they even share carbs together, can you believe?
Oh my
Emily God. Emily has evolved to the point where she can actually order carbs.
Thank
this
God.
Is huge.
Huge for
huge.
Her.
Huge.
If Emily saw what I was eating before a marathon, she would actually pass out.
I will say I saw this. I went to see this movie in theaters.
Yeah.
I could not go on the night when most of my friends were seeing it. So I went alone, which is fine. I love yeah. going to the movies alone. But I was sitting there watching these people that don't eat anything with a beer, M&M's, and popcorn, and I was like, this is why I don't work in high fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very happy with this trio.
I like to eat my stuff
in front of me.
That's how I felt too. No, because we went to Margaritaville before
for oh my
a little,
God.
A little pregame, so went yeah,
this
in
is,
buzzed
this is a movie to see
great.
With a drink.
Yes,
this is a movie to see with a drink.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we had I had copious amounts of fries and a burger and milkshake, or not a milkshake, a fucking like blended mango fucking rum punch, whatever, you know. It's great.
A slushy, an
slushy.
Alcoholic
I had
slushy.
I had a child slushy is what I had,
but with rum.
With rum, yes,
exactly.
The big point.
Did you have a nice loud audience?
Oh my God, they were so
active.
Fucking vocal. It was to the point where annoyingly two gay guys two seats over from us kept talking a little bit throughout the movie, and I did wait for someone to shush them, but
you didn't actually shush them.
I was going to, and I just didn't want confrontation.
Some queer voices should be silenced.
Agreed. But it was like, he was like, Andy would never do that, or like, I can't believe, like,
what?
He would like comment on that, and I was like, shut the fuck up, watch the fucking movie. It was annoying, but
yeah,
like,
whatever.
You don't have ownership over these characters. They are their own individuals. Let them live their lives.
Also, Andy would basically do anything.
Yes.
Like, she's not a particularly intelligent character.
Yeah.
She's obviously very good at her job.
Right, she can
but,
write.
Like, she craves validation in a way that makes you do stupid things.
Something that
I could never relate to.
I would have killed to have read her articles, though. I want to know what she writes like, you know?
I did see a few journalists being like, it's crazy that she types her articles right into CMS, which
right.
is like the upload platform. But then
she
other journalists were like, I do that.
Would
I don't
you?
Know.
I would not.
Fuck no!
There's no fucking way. Yeah.
There's no way. I need a backup. Or at least like in the cloud.
Yeah.
But
it's psychotic
also,
to do that.
It's
yeah.
psychotic. I had a pretty active audience too. It was fun. They were laughing. They were clapping. I was the only
yeah.
one that laughed
the
at
girlies.
Miranda's, one of Miranda's like amazing throwaway lines, which was, where's Amari? Was she human trafficked? And I thought it was so fucking funny. And I was the
I
only
that
one that
too.
Laughed. It really reminds me of like that felt like a very like 2006 Miranda line
yes.
when she's
yes.
like, where's my coffee? Is she dying or
done?
Something?
Yeah.
Like, it's so good.
The best. I also had a moment, I forget which fucking line it was, but there was one where I was the only laugh in the entire audience, and I turned to my partner and I was just like, no one laughed at that one.
But I thought it was funny.
But like,
Aline
Frosch McKenna, if it works, it works. I'm sorry.
We saw you and we yeah. appreciated you. I was trying to see like what she had been up to. I knew Aline Frosch McKenna that is, well, obviously she was Crazy Ex-Girlfriending
of course.
Until 2019, which a show that I like love very much.
What year
much.
Did that start?
2015.
That's a long run. That's good.
But she was like, she was in her kind of like, she was in her rom-com bag. She did
right.
27 Dresses, Morning Glory.
Morning, good
movie. I don't
know
movie. How she does it, which I have never seen.
I have not seen that either.
We Bought a Zoo. Jordan.
Oh my God, I can't believe
she
bought
a zoo.
She
was responsible for the zoo.
That's fucked up.
Not for directing it, but.
But she Jean still
Cameron
bought
Crow.
It.
She still bought it. And then she wrote the Annie, the Kevenson A. Wallace. Annie. I've never seen it.
Me neither.
Yeah. And then Cruella, of course.
Sure. Which is basically The Devil Wears Prada. Yes.
Yes.
The Devil Wears Pony. Or Pony, Jesus. Dalmatian.
The Devil Wears Dalmatian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she directed Your Place or Mine, which cannot say I checked that one out.
Is that
out.
The Ashton Kutcher, Reese Witherspoon?
Reese Witherspoon.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. It's her directorial debut. So we'll see what she does next. But I like her. I think...
It felt great.
She's a great writer.
David Frankel also did a pretty good job with this. it's crazy what happens when you shoot in real locations, like shooting in New York City and having them walk around New York streets
on like wet pavement. And you're like, wow, this looks amazing.
Looks like $1 million.
We were talking about this recently about how like modern movies tend to feel empty a lot of the time. Yes. Like it's just people talking in empty rooms. Even though it's kind of like a dying newsroom, the newsroom at Runway feels so like tangible and tactical. And like Nigel and Andy have these great like walk and talks where they're going past like everybody doing like mock-ups for the magazines. And I was like, oh, it just feels so nice.
There are people passing the screen constantly. Even when they're in Milan at the big shows, like it feels like there is a tangible energy there, you know? You feel people. That's what happens. Oh my god, it's a real movie. Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk it? I wonder if David Frankel got inspired from his time directing on The Morning Show to be like, we need some walk and talks. Actually, does that show do walk and talks? I don't know.
That show feels like it does, like, I shoot all of your scenes and then I shoot all of your scenes and we cut them together in the room.
Hey, I don't know. They could be like, no, this is a Sorkin-esque take.
That's true.
The absolute necessity of modern day journalism in America, much like The Devil Wears Prada too. What is David Frankel up to? Yeah. I don't really know what he's up to right now. If you look up any director who is not one of the 10 directors that can open an original movie, they tend to be doing prestige TV.
Yep.
What a shock.
The Irrational, don't know. Oh, Jerry and Marge Go Large.
A good movie and a great
Inventing
script.
Anna.
Yeah, you just like, seriously, all journeyman directors. We talked about The Long Walk recently and how Francis Lawrence is kind of like one of our only journeyman directors. And I think it's because he's just like hasn't pivoted to TV. And like, I love that TV is cinematic. It's great. But like, if I'm a director and I'm not trying to, you know, direct the next Transformers, what else am I going to do? I'm going to go do a prestige miniseries.
Yeah.
You gotta do something.
Jerry and Marge have got to go large. What are we doing? Yeah.
Like, you look at, like, I don't know. And then there's people like as you mentioned, Francis Lawrence or, like, David Yates. Or who's the Twilight guy? Who did all those Twilights?
Oh, the back half ones?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Hang on. I got it. But, like, if you don't have a franchise to kind of, like, lean on, Bill Condon, of course.
Thank you.
Did he do part two as well? Or is it some weird thing where, like, there was two different directors?
Oh, he definitely did part two.
No, he did part two. Okay,
yeah.
I love Bill Condon, except then he makes things that make me angry.
Kiss of the Spider Woman, he did.
No, that one did not make
me
angry.
That one was good. The Good Liar,
a movie we've talked
about like 10 times on this podcast.
Yeah, because it has one of the craziest twists of all time. Yeah. I was thinking more like The Fifth Estate, Mr. Holmes, Beauty and the Beast, The Greatest Showman.
Sure.
Or no, sorry, he didn't direct The Greatest Showman. The Fifth Estate, Mr. Holmes, Beauty and the Beast. Like, that's a tough run right there.
Do we ever cover Kinsey? Kinsey feels like a movie that didn't open on enough, right?
That we tried to look it up. It was Liam Neeson. I was going to say it was Gary Oldman. I think we looked it up and it like did not open on enough screens to cover. But I love talking about Bill Condon.
Yeah.
Because gay.
Fascinating guy. I mean, he does direct like Gods and Monsters. He writes Chicago, which is, you know, one of the most important movies to us.
Gods and Monsters? Kind of good. Like, kind of bad,
but kind of good. Yes.
No, sorry. Kinsey at his max was on 588 screens.
Yeah, that makes sense. Not.
Is there anything else, like, sort of, like, plot-wise, texturally, that we need to talk about The Devil Wears Prada? I just wanted to say we haven't mentioned, ostensibly, the villain. Well, I guess the villain is Justin Theroux, kind of, but the other villain is BJ Novak.
Yes.
And Boston's own. He plays, like, you know, essentially like a finance tech bro, but not like an aggressive one. He's a fail son.
Yeah.
Like, but not really. He's actually doing pretty well.
I actually think
he's a fail son, like, spiritually.
Performance. It's like, what if Kendall Roy like had a little bit more sauce, you know?
But he's not even like, what I like about him is that he's relatively normal.
Yes.
And so,
well, I like that he's just trying to flip it. You know, like, he doesn't kind of care.
What I thought is that, like, Justin Theroux is a little bit more, like, inherently evil. And that he's 100%. Like, well, one day, fashion will probably all be replaced by AI. Whereas, like, BJ Novak is kind of just like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't really get this. Yeah. But
I mean, I do like when he walks in and he's like, okay, here are all my boys. Here's what we're doing. It's just,
excuse me, they're not his boys. They are people.
Sorry. Yes.
People.
Hey guys, sorry. People.
People. But I like that he is not a mustache twirly villain, but it is more of a bastion of benevolent evil.
Which is, I think, endemic of sort of the time we're living in, where it's not like a guy who's setting out to be evil. It's just a part of everything that's happening.
Exactly.
You know?
Like, he can actually be a pretty decent guy and not really be like looking to run this into the ground, but just be kind of like, yeah, I mean, like, this is just what you do.
It's just sort of people who don't have taste or any emotional interiority are sort of what's taking over our culture, and that's why everything is turning bad, you know?
Yeah, but I think that, like, again, to the Justin Theroux thing and being like, no, I think that we can, like, replace this. Like, I think that change is, like, means that things just get essentially, like, crushed under the wheels of progress.
Yeah.
As opposed to the BJ Novak character, who is more like, I don't know, like, I don't really have a take. Like, I think it's a good example of showing that, like, not being passionate about something can be just as damaging as being, like, negatively passionate, if that makes sense. Like, you don't have to be, whatever, an AI grifter to be massively contributing negatively to, like, the decline of fine art and tangibility in society.
Right.
You can just be some guy.
That's, yeah, which is almost worse. I think that Justin Theroux also, like, they play him more stupid too, though. Like, obviously, I think, like, the way he's portrayed, like, when he's talking about how he's trying to, like, operate an aqua deficit and stuff like that. Like, he's played more for laughs.
I thought that was a great, stupid.
Well, it reminded me of the fucking guy who's, like, monitor, like, Brian Johnson.
The biohacking guy.
Yeah, who's, like, I'm measuring my wife's, like, body cell count and my semen and, like, blah blah blah. It's just all fucking disgusting.
I wish that you hadn't said that.
I hate life.
The last thing I want to talk about with Stanley Tucci and his "Forever My Girl" line is that this whole film is set up as to be like some sort of like kismet serendipity that brought everybody back into everybody's lives, but in reality, you think that this is just, you think that you selected the sweater, when in reality, the sweater has been selected for you by the people in this room. From a pile of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, nothing in fashion is, like, serendipitous or spontaneous.
Yes.
It's very carefully curated.
Yeah.
And it's meant to look effortless. And that's art in general. Art looks effortless, and it's not. And, like, I love that the whole movie is predicated on, like, wow, what a stroke of fortune. When in reality, Nigel sees that Andy loses her job and has enough pull to be like, Irv, aka owner of Runway, like, you need to get this girl.
Yeah. No, that's the sweetest part of it. I've been,
it's so great.
Because he's been, he also just means that, and it indicates that he's been keeping tabs on her also for those 20 years in between, which is genuinely also so caring.
Yeah. You know? And there's even like a great kind of like mini Miranda and Andy arc where the much was made of this, as you mentioned in the trailer, of Miranda not remembering who Andy was. People were like, OMG, she has dementia. And it's like, I'm sorry.
It's
Do
a
you
bit.
Think that she remembers every assistant that has ever worked for her? And I genuinely believe that Miranda does not remember who Andy is.
Okay, so you're in that camp. Because I saw other camps where it was like, she does know, but was sort of just like doing a little razz. But
I don't think she remembers because she's been working for, at that point, what, like 40 years? She probably has an assistant every 2 years.
Two assistants.
Every 2 years.
Yes.
Like,
yes. It's a lot of names.
I think that's very reasonable. And I also think that, like, I've also seen some complaints about people being like, Andy kind of like, it feels like she goes through regression when, like, she's this, like, cool, badass
the Stockholm
journalist.
Syndrome, whatever.
And it's like, I'm sorry, if I was faced with
my
mentor, who I had a deeply intimate yet difficult relationship with, I would revert back to being like 25
for sure.
Again, I think it's all, I think it is intentional.
Yes.
But like, the point is that what we were saying about Nigel at the end of her kind of arc, Miranda is like, I knew you would do great things, and Andy's like, you forgot who I was, and she's like, well, I did, but before that,
right,
I knew that you were gonna do great things. It's the idea that like, things move, but people remember you.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is kind
it's
of the
nice.
Sweetest thing. Yeah. No, I like it.
Also, it's nice.
I agree. I would also regress. I regress if I just see, you know, it's just, that's a part of life. Like, you fall
didn't
into
want
these
assistance
patterns.
In this movie because right, you thought exactly. that you would be triggered.
Too traumatizing. Oh my god. But yes,
it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. I love it. I think it could have been, if we're speaking specifically queer, I think it probably could have been queerer. But absolutely. At the same time, I think having Miranda, you have Andy, you have all of these ingredients that do make it queer. So it's not like it removed a lot of that, but it also is not necessarily infused more with it. I do think you have the benefit of Lady Gaga, which is always helpful. But like Stanley Tucci does feel like he's even more straight in this movie than he was in the previous one, which is just further cementing his like best straight gay man ever, and or best gay man at playing, or you know, inverse, vice versa, etc. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just happy that he and his sister-in-law got to have a whole press tour together. That was probably delightful.
I mean, the press tour
them.
Has been fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
When's it bad?
Yeah. You have four cool people doing fun stuff. Great.
And looking fashionable.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I agree that this kind of feels straighter. I was looking at our... I'll save it for when we get
good.
There.
Yeah, yeah,
for
yeah.
now, let's talk about how good this movie is doing. It's already the sixth highest grossing movie of 2026.
Incredible stuff.
After opening weekend, which is really great. How much do we think it cost? I don't think that it is reported $100 million.
I was going to say like $100 to $150 maybe, just for like the fees of everyone, et cetera.
Yeah, these are some expensive yeah. people.
Yeah.
For reference,
what was
topping out of the Devil Wears Prada OG was $41 million, but let me do some inflation really quick. I'm typing in 2006 to 2026, and what it auto-populated was how many years. I think that we can all do that one in our head, guys.
So bleak. That's so bleak.
A little sad. But let's figure out how much The Devil Wears Prada would have cost today, extended famous fees. Would have been like $90 million. So really, we're like on par.
Same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same.
But this movie opened well this year for movies. I'm feeling optimistic. Things are doing okay.
So
people
far.
Are going to the movies so far.
Yeah, this opened super very wide,
yeah.
4,000 screens, which is amazing. It's rare that you see that, I feel like. And it already has grossed 76 domestic, 233 worldwide. Like, that's
good.
Huge.
That's great.
Big international take.
Yeah.
I'm stoked.
I'm hyped. People like this stuff. Miranda Beastly.
I hate that.
I think it's so funny.
It's very funny. It beat Michael also, which is great.
Good. Destroy it.
Fuck that movie,
send it
man.
To hell.
And I think people are loving it. Like, yeah. It got like great reviews. Do you
I literally love it. I think it's so fun.
Do you want to guess the average?
It's so new. I'll say 3.6.
Jordan says 3.6. And the people of Letterboxd say 3.4.
That feels rude.
Our friends say 3.6.
Okay, yeah. Saying. Good taste. 3.4.
Like,
come on.
We're already at almost like 400K people that have seen it.
That also feels like indicative of men seeing this movie and then being like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, two and a half stars.
And you're just like, fucking, hey, God, like, fucking let your masculinity down for a second and enjoy a fucking little bit of fashion, you dweeb.
We all love fashion. Bring back metrosexual.
Bring back
metrosexuality.
Imagine saying someone's metrosexual in the year of our Lord 2026. What would happen?
Bring it back. I mean, I feel like now we just say that they're a performative male feminist.
A little bit longer to say, but hey.
Yeah. So I was looking at our QQ rating from last time, and you and I both gave it 3.5 stars. Liz gave it 5. Good for her. Which begs the question, is the sequel more or less gay than the original?
Ooh.
And I'm inclined to say a little less gay, and I don't want that to all be sitting on the back of like Tucci, but like
he does have a gay speech in the last one though.
Or is it more that I write a young boy reading Runway under the covers at night? Is it more that I'm like 20 years have passed, we could do more now that
I
they're not
think
doing?
It's that I think the ships are nice enough in this, but also like even though we're putting that on, and even though you have Lady Gaga, which automatically should add half a star,
I mean, it definitely adds at least half a star.
Yeah, so this is either equal and or like slightly less to me.
But
I
shouldn't be coming out of Devil Wears Prada being like the gayest thing about that movie was Lady Gaga.
I do agree.
Like, that's a little sad.
That's a good point.
I think I'm going to give it 2.5.
So we gave it 3.5 last time?
Yeah.
I'll say 3.
Okay, I think that's... I'm going to say 3 too, actually.
Miranda herself is so queer culture, you know?
And she is a gay icon.
Yeah.
Like, the things that the Meryl Streep performance has done for, like, men on TikTok.
Yes.
Gay men on TikTok.
Yes. Did you see the SNL Olivia Rodrigo Devil Wears Prada parody that they did?
Yeah, with James Acaster?
Oh my God, incredible stuff.
Fucking unbelievable performance.
Yes, yes, he embodies her. It's crazy.
Yes,
yeah,
it's great.
It's really good. But also, like, the Eurovisionary Eurovendor is going to do dirty work on gay insult Twitter. Like, that is... gay men will be deploying that for years.
I mean, because that's the thing, is that everybody does think they're visionary. I think that every influencer... and or content creator does think that they're a visionary.
Yes.
When in reality, you are generally just
selling
a vendor for Rode or Rare Beauty or like Awala.
No, this,
like, what are big brands?
No, literally. This is like, this is reminding me of, like, I have zero understanding of the Alex Earle / Alex Cooper.
It's correct? Alex Earle and Alex Cooper.
I could
and
give
by the way,
two fucks about either of them.
We still don't have closure, so I can't even, like, I need my YouTube deep dive.
Sure.
Like, they need to hurry up and squash the beef so that I can get the full timeline.
So you
I
actually,
can't keep
do
up.
You care about this or no?
I care about it being repackaged for me in the form of a YouTube video essay.
Okay, sure, okay.
Well, I
was
going
to say, like, to me, I'm like,
following
they both feel right just now. Like people who are like, I'm trendsetting, this is me, and I'm just like, I don't know who you are, you know? Like, what are you doing? But
yeah, I will say, vocal fry aside, the little sketch about them on SNL was quite funny.
It was good.
I thought that the Valley Girl vocal fry was a bit much because they actually both do have very distinctive ways of talking that are like bad in unique ways.
Get ready with me.
But the way, I do think it's like a perfect encapsulation. And you have people that like are doing more interesting content stuff in this film, like Kayla Perrin or like Emilia de Waldeberg has like a cameo,
of course.
But then it's like, I like that they restricted it to the proper high fashion girlies.
Agreed.
A la like a Winnie Harlow or a Heidi Klum.
Yeah,
like Alex Earle is not getting a cameo in
Thank
the Devil Wears.
Well, it was like they cut Sydney Sweeney's cameo and I was like, thumbs up.
Was it supposed to be her or was it supposed to be like,
I think she was supposed to be at like one of the parties or something.
Listen, she's not like a fashion girl.
No, exactly.
She's
I'm going to say this. I think Euphoria is imperfectly encapsulating why Sydney Sweeney is not a fashion girly.
If anyone is a fashion girly on that show, Zendaya, obviously.
Zendaya,
but it's like fucking
Hunter Schaefer. Hunter Schaefer is serving every look. Yes.
Actually, Alexa Demi, a little bit.
No. Oh,
Sydney Sweeney is not a fashion girl.
No, Alexa Demi is wedding
fit. You don't
fit
have to be a fashion
good.
Girl.
Yeah.
Ugh, that...
I mean, well, this is a separate conversation.
We can't turn this into a Euphoria
episode. No, this is a separate conversation.
Anyway, that's The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Good.
Could not more highly recommend.
It.
Go see it. Great time at the movies. I think we'll probably benefit from a rewatch. I don't know that it feels like as innately rewatchable as the first one, but also every time I rewatch the first one, I deeply want to fast forward through Nate scenes, and there is no Nate in this movie.
I agree.
Which makes it more rewatchable.
Agreed.
To me.
I think this movie is... more rewatchable in that sense and more depressing in the cultural landscape is hell sense, so that might be hard to go back to at
but
times.
I like
but
that it doesn't wrap everything up in a bow, like we
agreed.
Said that it's about like, this is the runway of today. But it might be different tomorrow, and I think that is sort of oddly comforting, more so than if they were like, and guys, we did it.
Yeah.
We saved the magazine.
I think it's also indicative of Anna Wintour being on a cover with Meryl a few weeks ago. And there
was
the whole
crazy
thing with Emily on the cover in this, where it's like, Anna Wintour's never on a cover.
Yeah.
She's calling her shot now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So telling.
Meryl Streep not attending tonight's Met Gala.
Good.
Allegedly, because of the Bezoses.
I mean,
good
they have
her.
No taste.
Anne Hathaway was there, though. Her dress looks good.
But I mean, she's also like one of the most iconic fashionistas.
I'm extremely pro people boycotting the Met Gala this year, but I'm not about to cancel people for attending the Met Gala. Yeah.
I mean,
there are bigger problems.
Yes. Gestures to the world.
The world. I fucking love the Met Gala. And all of those like watching from District 12, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
Bread and circuses. They fucking got me, I guess.
God, I feel like...
What do you want from me?
I would, if I ever had the chance to go to the Met Gala, I would go as cuckoo bananas as I humanly possibly could. Like, I would try to wear the craziest shit, because I would be like, this is my one and done. I'm not coming back, you know?
But you have to do it with...
Taste.
There has to be a level of eye and style absolutely. And taste.
I think about the knight armor that Zendaya did that one time.
Oh, I think about it all the time.
Like, that is something I would want to serve. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is so iconic to me.
Yeah.
To me, that is something personal.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to wear armor to a public event, just like in general.
Yeah.
Would be great. Anyway, good movie. Go see it. And that's that. I'm always so bad at ending episodes when we don't have a guest. So thank you for listening. We are on the internet. We don't have a magazine.
We
could come click on us.
Could we? No.
I'm a Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And that goes for Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd. You can drop us a listen. You can drop us a listen wherever podcasts are streamed.
Yeah.
And give us a rate. Five.
Red stilettos.
Prada heels. Yes, only. Let us know via review what you thought about this film. And if you are Team Mirandy or Team... And Mandy? I don't know what that name was.
Mirandy, and I think it was Sax. I think it was Andy's last. It was like that into a Sackily. Ugh. Definitely not that.
I don't know. Anyway, let us know. Get involved in the ship wars. We're here for it. And you can also always let us know what you might like to see us cover in the future.
And what are we seeing in the future? What are we covering?
What a great question. all of our stuff is in the can because we're recording this ahead of time. Of course, two weeks from today, we are covering really like...
Hit it.
We're covering Rock and Rolla. I was like, David Ritchie's... The fashion in Guy Ritchie's movies is kind of on par with David Frankel. And then I can't build a bridge here.
Can we think...
2 weeks from today...
Madonna... The Madonna Bridge. We're building the Madonna Bridge.
We're building the Madonna Bridge. 2 weeks from today, Guy Ritchie's Rock and Rolla. Be there.
Be square,
bruv.
Oh, hey, bruv. We're going to cover fucking Rock and Rolla.
It's in the can. It's a good time. Is it anything super focused episode.
Yes. Very
so
focused.
So focused.
Well, because Rock and Rolla really requires a lot of our thinking power, you know?
Yeah. Some crazy shit that we do.
Great returning guest.
Yes. So tune in 2 weeks from today for that.
Is there anything you want to leave all fucking assistance with?
Well, don't be British. This is not a British movie. Okay. Thank you.
Is there anything that you want to leave our assistance with? That was my Miranda.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I thought that was good. Yeah. I'm surprised that the line that you related the most to wasn't, of course, Nigel telling Andy that she looked like a nervous cat. That's like you in a nutshell.
She was like, is that a compliment?
And he was like, and he's like, no.
No.
But we would take it as one.
Oh, I would be like, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Nervous cat.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. It calls to us. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives richer, calmer, and frankly, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby or trails worth traveling to and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Whether you're looking for a laid-back walk with family, or something more adventurous to get your heart pumping, AllTrails gives you the tools you need to get out there and find your outside. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.